RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you have discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. You know, in this last week, Josh, I've had a number of accidents. I got this this great scar here. It's from Amateur Amusements in the Barroom. And then this one over here behind my ear, this is from some crazy Frenchie come at me with a knife. I caught him with a good right hand, you know, right in the snot locker, and laid him amongst the sweet peas.
Wow, those are some impressive. I like that. That's good.
Yeah.
You wear it kind of like a badge, too. Looks good.
It is.
So, yeah. I've got a hangnail.
Oh, do you now?
Yeah, and, well, my belly button, does that count?
That's a good one. I didn't even think about that one. Oh, and this one right here, right by my heart?
Yep. Yeah.
Mary Ellen Moffat. She broke my heart.
Oh, that's just a sad one.
Yeah.
That's just a sad. Well,
but enough of the scar stories here. That surprisingly, the episode this week was not called Scars.
Because
I think that would have been a really good name for the episode. I think that, you know, it's people had these injuries that had healed over time. I thought that could have been a good title for it, but no, what is the name of the episode this week?
Well, it looks like they were trying to incorporate the you know, the whole clock aspect in the title, I think, so Scars might not have fit, but this particular episode was called Time of Death, and it was episode 14 from season 2. So it was written by Wendy Miracle and Beth Schwartz. I've heard those names
back,
before. Yeah. And it was directed by Nick Copas. Nick Copas. Okay. Have we heard that name before? That one doesn't sound
so
familiar.
No, I don't think so.
Hmm.
Oh, he's... I think he lives out in the little building out back. It's like a cabana. I think it's the Copas cabana.
Well, he's been working on this episode while he's out there, I think.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Music and laughter I hear out there all the time, but okay. So let's talk a little bit about this episode before we get into it and really analyze it. But you know, time I is on your side. Yes, it is.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
Well, at least if you're William Talkman, it is. He also known as the Clock King, and he's using his expertise in computers and obsessive compulsive timekeeping to rob banks. Now, even though his actions are for a good cause, Oliver and Sarah and Diggle and Felicity and Officer Lance, they must stop him in a timely manner. But, you know, Felicity's feeling a little bit jealous of her new team member and her multitude of skills, which may just make Felicity obsolete. But, you know, Sarah, she's got her own worries while good old Dad tries to put the family back together. And, of course, we couldn't let a week go by without some Queen family troubles while Oliver refuses to give Moira the time of day. But don't worry. I'm sure they're going to get everything accomplished right at the buzzer. But it's not over until the Fat Lady sings. And by Fat Lady, I mean Slade Wilson. And by sings, I mean shows up at the Queen Mansion.
Oh, man. I thought they were going to be holding off on that. I saw some pictures from next week's episode, and I'm like, and then they... gave us that big moment.
I did too. I thought kind of for sure that was going to be more of a season finale kind of thing, at least toward the end of the season. But
again, they're jumping into stuff so much faster than we expect them to.
Well, and we got people in the wings too. I mean,
this is going to be a knockdown, drag out, you know, last 9 episodes for the season here. I can't believe we're almost at the end of the season again. We're, about two-thirds of the way through it, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's...
And
they squeeze a lot of action into the next few episodes.
Oh, boy. Yeah, definitely. And we're going to have one more episode, and then there's going to be a one-week break. So this is the part of the year I hate, because they kind of start-stop the series, and then they finally get into that last run so they can go through, you know, into May sweeps.
Yeah, that seems to be pretty common for a lot of series these days. The second half of the season, it's very choppy, and I'm almost kind of understanding where you get those HBO series like Game of Thrones and they used to do Breaking Bad, Walking Dead, you know, where they have these really 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 long breaks, but then they come back and they just do the entire
they get everything straight.
Season, yeah, right. all together. So I almost kind of like that better.
Yeah, it's tough because you get the people that are kind of on the fence about a show, and it's like, is it on this week? Oh no, it's a repeat again. And you know, this is the time where it's like, oh, it's a repeat. It's a repeat. Oh, there's a new episode. Oh, now it's a repeat. It's
well, I think it makes it hard, especially for shows that aren't your super strong shows, like in the top 10, 20 ratings. It makes it hard for them to get a consistent audience. So
yeah.
And you got to be careful with that stuff. But Arrow seems to be doing okay, yeah?
It's doing really well. The news we got in the break that we were just on here, they got renewed for season 3. There was a nice little image that Stephen Amell put out on his Facebook page of Oliver in his Green Arrow garb and Sarah in her Black Canary garb and Roy in his red hoodie were standing there all holding up three fingers. So I thought that was.
I thought they were promoting a website or something. The www standing next to each other. That's not what that was.
No, I don't think so.
I gotcha.
It's close. And like I said, we're coming up on the end of the season here. We are, we're the end of February now. By the time people are listening to this, it'll be the beginning of March, and May 14th is the finale. So, 2.5 months, really. And that's 9 episodes, so...
All right, well, see, now it. The last part will maybe just be back-to-back-to-back. That's good.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. And then in slightly related news here, I think fans of the show will be interested in this. Today, as we record the episode here on Friday, the first picture of Grant Gustin in the Flash helmet was revealed. And, boy, does it look cool. They've don't have I can't tell, but no wings on the helmet, but it's got the big Flash iconic lightning bolt in gold over the ear.
I think that kind of takes place of the
wing
of the little wing thingy on his head. Yeah,
I think this is kind of the new design I think they've had this design in the comics. I didn't have a chance to kind of Google up some of the more recent iterations of the comic book Flash costume, but it looks like it might be based on one of the more recent versions, because it looked familiar to me from playing Injustice on my iPad, and because there are a couple different versions of Flash on that.
Yeah, well, the thing that stood out to me as being more the modern design was the little chin guard whatever you'd call that.
Yeah, because it doesn't come down underneath his chin. It kind of comes along the jawline, and then there's a little piece that comes up in front of his chin, which is really cool looking. But they give good, there's a lot of space for his mouth and good eye socket space, so you can really see his, eyes much in the same way that they've done with, Oliver's mask, where, I don't know if Grant's going to be wearing makeup or anything the way that Stephen Amell does, but it looks really cool. And based on looking at the larger version of the picture, it looks like he's got kind of a leather jacket, tunic. So it's not like some kind of unitard thing underneath. So it's...
it almost has like a collar.
Right. Yeah, it looks like I guess that's why I'm thinking it's like a jacket, because it's kind of a collar piece to it there. And I don't think we had announced this before, but... recently, probably within the last couple weeks, they announced that John Wesley Shipp, who played the Flash in the 1980s or early 90s version of the Flash on TV, he is coming to the CW version of the show. And if the show gets picked up, he will play a recurring character, but they haven't announced who that is. I'm wondering if he's going to be playing Barry Allen's dad.
Oh, Barry Allen. Oh, that see, that fits okay.
How would that be? That'd be pretty cool. But now, if he were playing the bad guy, you know, or a bad guy, that would be pretty cool as well.
Yeah, I guess I'm anxious to hear a little bit more about how often he'll be on it and how often other names that they've dropped will be on it.
I just want them to pick that show up. I mean, yeah. I'm really excited to see the pilot, which I hope will at least get released, because it's, you know, it'll be ready for September, so we'll have to see what goes on here. But they are in the middle of doing that. So, and who knows, maybe Barry will be coming back to Arrow here before the end of the season. It's, you know, anything could happen at this point. We still, I still think they probably want to resolve the will he come out of his coma storyline. I just feel that even if it's just with a sentence, it's important to Felicity's story in this series. So I think they should do that at some point.
Well, I would like to see them bring it back since it's going to be so long before the Flash pilot. And I think, you know, I mean, you know, they had stuff, I don't know how prepared it was, but they had some stuff somewhat prepared because they were going to do the pilot basically within Arrow, right? I mean, isn't that within the season of Arrow?
Yeah, they were going to use an episode of Arrow to do the pilot, and then they were allowed to get their own pilot. So it still makes me think they want to bring him back at some point. And I think one of the producers had said that even if the pilot were not to make it into a series, which I would really highly doubt at this point, you know, without I can say that without it even being made, I guess. But I think that you know, they would want to, they said they want to bring him back to the show in some fashion, even if the pilot doesn't get picked up. So, you know, because they like the actor, and I think they like the character. So I'm very pleased with where everything's going right now. It sounds very exciting. So,
yep, fingers crossed.
Stay tuned. Right. So, all right. So let's get into talking a little about Time of Death, which, like you said at the beginning, it's probably very much about the time motif, due to having Mr. Talkman, a.k.a. the Clock King, not, you know, when I first heard that he was going to be on there, I'm like, the Clock King, I'll buy any clock for $49.99. You know, it's not some kind of bad commercial from...
Nobody,
you know,
beats the Clock King. Nobody.
Yeah. you'll have to be Clock King nuts to beat the Clock King.
Well, I like that one. That's a good one.
It's like the Sofa King, you know. So anyway, so Time of Death. All right. So let's kind of go through the possible iterations for the title of this. I said, you know, Scars, I thought would be a good title because there was some stuff there, but we'll get to that. So Time of Death. All right. So I thought obviously Clock King, right, you know, Time of Death, because William Talkman has a disease that is has, you know, it's limiting his time on Earth. Time of death is a phrase that is used in, you know, hospitals to, I guess, nurses and doctors. They call the time of death to write down on their paperwork, just so, you know, they have an official time of death when this person passed away in the hospital for their records purposes.
Right.
So that was my, you know, that was one of my, I guess the obvious one that I was kind of thinking of, but I had a couple other ideas as well.
Well, connected to Talkman as a kind of obvious other, I guess you'd call it a turn of phrase or something like that. I mean, he, you know, he's got that obsession with time, and he's also a killer. So, I mean, I guess he could even put it on his business card. I'm Time of Death. that connection too, you know, with him just being the killer when in trying to accomplish his task and with his obsession with time, which, well, we'll kind of get into that more a little bit. But so, what were your other ones that were related?
So there was Laurel. So as I'm watching the Laurel storyline, remember we've been talking about Laurel's descent, right, mm-hmm. throughout the entire season, and each time we think she's not going to go further down, she does. And the last time we left her, her sister had come back, and you're like, okay, all right, so this is the turning point. Her sister's back, and that's going to help her. No, she went on another binge and had a, you know, kind of a screaming, throwing wine glass fit at her and basically told her to get out of the apartment because, you know, Sarah's perfect and then blah, blah, blah. So in this episode, Laurel continues to be the bee in apartment 305 and, you know, was continuing to drink and everything like this. But I feel that because of the resolution of the Laurel-Sarah conflict to a degree at the end of the episode, Laurel basically has died. And she was talking about, in these metaphors, about drowning, very much like her sister was drowning. And, you know, it's when Sarah came back, she realized she wasn't the person that she thought she was. And so she has now seen herself, pronounced herself dead, and has been born again, not in a necessarily a religious sense, but just in a renewed purpose in life. She goes and she has this very emotional connection with her sister because she doesn't want to lose her. You know, it's sounds like Ollie's words were kind of sinking in about her only having the one sister. Mm. And then she goes to the AA meeting, which you really only know it's an AA meeting. There's a brief bit of text you can see behind Lance, Officer Lance, on the blackboard. But it's definitely the same place that they had gone to either the last episode or the episode before that, where he tried to trick her into going to the AA meeting. So I thought that was a little more into that one. But
one other when right before the dinner, before everybody showed up, she grabbed the little bottle of pills there and didn't take any.
Yeah, that was she was interrupted. Beginning. She could have done it, but she decided not to there.
Yeah, so that was that seemed almost like, well, maybe not the beginning. I'd say the beginning was probably when she agreed to have the dinner in the first place. Okay, yeah, I kind of like that. I really like that that kind of connection, and I would agree with you.
And then the final one that I saw was also pretty literal of the plane pilot actually dies. Like, he gets, you know, he makes his kind of final say to Sarah, and then Oliver comes back, and Sarah tells him, you know, he's dead. He's dead, Jim.
So. Yeah, he did. That was not much flashback this week. It was
in preparation of probably a big flashback next week, it sounds like.
Yeah, for sure. So, well, I think that's all great. You know, I think the most obvious one is Tachman there. So since we brought him up early, let's talk about Agent Tachman of Death Division. the Clock King, who, you know, not a huge villain in the DC universe, but I really like the way they brought him into this universe. Great villain in this show, and I thought just brilliantly played by Robert, I guess Knepper is Knepper. How you say his name.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, I don't actually know what else he has been in. Do you?
Prison Break, which I never watched, but
yeah, me neither.
That's what I found out that he was. More people would know him from that, but I can't really tell you too much about that. It was a Fox show that was on.
Okay. Well, I really liked the way he played him. It was more subtle, you know, as opposed to the you know, Count Vertigo type villain.
Right. He was also an older character too. I remember we were joking about this. Oh my gosh, it was probably before Christmas now because they were casting for an older character to play William Tachman, and I remember you joking about that. You know, you were going to go in for the audition or something like that, but he wasn't, you know, a younger, prettier kind of guy. And I would say he really took the role. He had like quiet malice. He wasn't bombastic in like the way a Joker is or somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you weren't really sure what he was going to do, but he had these weird mannerisms and stuff like this. And the fact that the killing that he did to his henchmen kind of seemingly came out of nowhere. You know, he was just very quiet about it. And then, you know, the dead can't collect debts or something like that. And stab the guy with a giant minute hand.
That was pretty good for the Clock King. That felt very comic booky in a realistic way. That was good.
And at least he did not dress up like he did in the comic with like a giant clock on his head and pajamas with clocks all over them. So,
hey.
Or what? Not clocks, but with little sand hourglasses, I guess.
Yeah.
Having, so.
Although that image of him in pajamas with clocks on, I'm like, I kind of want to see that. But maybe his prison uniform will be have clocks on it. That might work. I hesitate to say creepy, but I want to think of a word like creepy that doesn't. To me, creepy was like the doll. Oh my gosh, I can't believe it's. See, this is what happens. Happens when there's too many spaces in between episodes. The doll maker. No, what was it, the doll guy?
Oh, the. Isn't it the doll maker?
Is that it? Okay, the doll maker. I couldn't remember if that was him.
Because there's
not,
the toy maker. I think it was the doll maker.
Okay, so yeah, he was creepy. That's definition of creepy. But this guy was just kind of ominous with his kind of gravelly voice, and he'd kind of talk in, you know, Felicity's ear, and just the way he killed that guy with a minute hand. So yeah, I really enjoyed this villain. I'm glad he didn't die. Felicity knocked him out, so he could come back potentially. Not, you know, I don't know how long he could come back having a disease that's going to kill him eventually. But
right.
I did like him, so kudos on the Clock King.
He kind of had it was almost like the modern Batman voice, the Christian Bale Batman voice, because he was kind of, you know, growling down here and stuff like that, just like constantly out of breath. But you know, maybe you could attribute that to the disease or something like that. So anyway, I thought Robert Knepper did a really good job on that. And, it will be interesting to see, if he comes back again. There is a potential for him to join a certain squad, with him A, not being dead, and B, the character in the comic has joined such a squad previously at some point. I think it's kind of like the X-Men. I think everybody's been a member at some point, but that should be interesting. So, and you mentioned Felicity. She knocked him out by blowing up his cell phone. Which, I don't know. There were a few points that I felt there were some kind of scenes that I was just like, that wouldn't really work like that, but. I think fans of Felicity got a lot from her. There was a lot of character development and growth for her in this episode. Some favorite moments for myself include her intrusion into the Oliver Diggle Sarah's scar story thing, sharing her scars, which of course are in her mouth, you know. And Sarah says, you know, oh, you're so cute.
I really did like Felicity in this episode. There were some scenes and scenarios with her that I wasn't fond of, but
like her putting herself in trouble again. That was a little infuriating.
Yeah, it wasn't so bad this time because she wasn't setting herself up as bait. She was really just.
But why did she? I mean. I guess she had to be there, right? Because he had destroyed all the computers at the Arrow Cave. So
right. She needed to have access to ways to track him, and also I think she was trying to kind of lure Oliver there faster. But I also kind of felt like she was trying to prove herself, which fit very well with the episode and her character in this episode.
Mm-hmm. She was very jealous of now that Sarah's back. It's like, well. She's beautiful. She can kick ass. What do I do? It's like, you wear glasses and like pencil skirts and like work on computers, and it's like totally cool.
That's plenty for me.
Yeah.
Sarah's a little intimidating for me. I don't think I could handle that, so I'm okay with Felicity.
I don't know. Oliver can't handle Sarah, Canary in the comics and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think that's a good point.
I liked the scene where she was figuring stuff out herself, where she kind of I didn't mind that scene where she kind of went down there. But you're right. I don't like it when she puts herself in harm's way. I really liked the scene where she interrupted with the scar story, and I liked where she was practicing her
oh, yeah.
her, I guess it wasn't parkour, but she was just getting some...
her martial arts stuff.
Some moves. Her martial arts stuff. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And then she got interrupted by everybody. Not just Sarah, but everybody came
right.
down.
Well, there's such a huge group of them now. It's like, it's just kind of, you know, it's humorous because there are these all these people, like, tagging along with Oliver now. But as I was telling my kids, like, when they're all in the... when they all come to the bank at the end or the savings and loan or whatever it is, it's like a superhero team. I mean, look, you got two people in costumes. You got like the tech person and then the muscle dude with the gun. It's great.
Yeah, it's much, I want to say realistic. It's not really realistic, but it's much more believable when you have multiple people helping out with stuff like this, because you really couldn't do it all on yourself or
right.
on your own, despite what Batman thinks. I forgot what I was going to say here about Felicity, but it was one more thing with her and practicing well, there. But oh, I know. It was just with Oliver. Man, I tell you, with the way he you can tell he cares for Felicity, but the way he shows it is like one of those friends, you know, who's always thinks he's kind of helping you out when they criticize you. You know
what are you wearing? That is that the.
Yes. I kind of want Diggle to stand up for her a little bit, because he totally sees what's going on, and he sees how she feels. He can tell, and he's always kind of standing in the background, not saying much. In the first season, he was always calling Oliver on that stuff.
Yeah, it is. Oliver does seem to be a little harsh without realizing that how harsh he actually is being. I think we're seeing it from Felicity's side, and it's like he comes in and he's just like barking orders and telling her to stop doing whatever she's doing. Get back on that computer.
Well,
she's
and this is
like,
not the first time he's done that, too.
I know.
He kind of takes out his frustrations whenever he fails or she fails, even though, you know, I mean, they're up against some people that are really smart or clever or talented.
But then you look at the scene at the end where she's taken the aspirin, the special aspirin pills, where she's giggling and everything like that. And she says, you know, it's like, I'm always used to being your girl. Now, I mean, not your girl, but, you know, your girl, you know, it sounds the same, but there's two different words in my head or whatever. And Oliver is just, he's got that look, you know, he's just, you know, he knows what she's saying. He knows what she's trying to say. He's just very, you know, amiable about the whole thing. He's not trying to brush her off.
Yeah,
But he's also not trying to, you know, say, you know, go home, you're drunk. He is the friend, like he is the guy that you want to have as your friend, whether you're a guy or a girl. I mean, he is.
You can tell
very loyal.
He cares for her, and she definitely cares for him. And I think I like what she said too about how it's not about me and him. You know, it's not about us or whatever she's saying to Diggle, where why she was feeling the way she was feeling. She wasn't really jealous of the relationship between Sarah and Oliver. It was just, you know, she was feeling like she was starting to be a little bit obsolete. You know, she was not going to be necessary around there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can tell that the relationship between Oliver and Felicity has kind of established itself into what it is. It's not going to be a romantic relationship, and they both realize that. I just kind of wish he'd be a little bit nicer to her sometimes.
Yeah.
Or at least more understanding. So, and that's not a criticism of the show. It's just, you know, somebody going, hey, man, come on, give her a break.
Right.
So.
All right. So what else did we see here in this episode?
All right. Well, I did like so many things in this episode, but I do have a few criticisms, and maybe it's just been a long time since I was able to watch a show because they've had such a break,
uh-huh.
Or maybe I was just really watching this one or something. I'm not sure, but as far as I'm concerned, in this episode, there were just too many coincidences, just too many things that were convenient for the plot. You know,
it was
all
good timing.
It was very, very good timing. I guess there we go. See, it was because Talkman was there and he was keeping
exactly.
track of everything. The plane crash on the island,
mm-hmm.
I thought was it was just a little bit too handy, too convenient. I'm not even sure what the purpose of it was other than to tell a backstory for Sin.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it also gave him a nice little handy plot device where they could use the... I guess that was a raft. I'm assuming that's what
it was.
Parachute. Well, how are they going to get... They're going to jump off the cliff and land on the...
Okay, so we came up with two theories in my household.
Okay.
Because Oliver pulls it out, and I'm like, oh, yeah, a raft. And he's like, you know, and then Slade goes, parachute. I'm like, parachute? What the heck? They need a raft, not a parachute. But the kids were like, well, they could use that as a sail. And I'm like, okay, that's a good idea, too. And then we also came up with the idea that, yes, maybe they will go up to one of the high peaks, because when you see the establishing shot of the island... There is no flat place on that island, so I have no idea where this fuselage is they've been hanging out in and all these other flat areas they've been on, because that island is just one big series of peaks. So they can go up to the top of one of the peaks and jump off
and they do parasail. Like going up to the top of those hills and scouting things out. They've done that in several episodes.
Sure,
so.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I could see that. That'd work. I'm not sure how all three of them are going to get there with the parachute.
Yeah, I'm thinking... I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Just, well, they're very athletic, so I'm sure they'll come up with something.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe this is where Slade loses an eye or something. I don't know.
he runs into a tree branch or something? What?
No, here's the thing. They're going to find a box, and inside's a Red Ryder BB gun, and Oliver's going to say, nuh-uh, you put your eye out.
That was on the plane, right?
Yeah, it would be on the plane, because he was carrying BB guns.
It was Captain Ralphie.
China.
Is that who that was? It was...
I don't know. But right, yeah, so, there was no, yeah, other than giving them that parachute for some reason, whatever they're going to use that for, it also told Sin's backstory, which to me was like, as soon as he said, my daughter, she's 13, I'm like, 13 and 5. Oh, my God. That's Sin's dad? Like, what is... What? How?
Well, you're smarter than me. I didn't come up with that. I mean, until the end, I saw it, but...
Yeah, it felt very obvious to me, I guess, at the beginning, because they were teasing, and it's like, well, who else is, you know... He's talking about a young daughter. It's like, we only know one person that could be. Again, I'm not trying to brag or anything. I'm just saying it seemed very obvious to me and not, I guess, coincidental. I mean, it was just like you said.
Well, it was just good that if he had to fly over any island, he was flying over an island, a guy from Starling City, where his daughter still is. And
well,
he happened to land
now,
on-
we're making an assumption that, and because I was talking to someone at work about this as well, we're making an assumption that Sin has always lived in Starling City.
Yeah, I thought about that, too.
Because Sin came with Sarah, right? Or was Sin there before Sarah got back?
Well, we don't really know.
I'm thinking that it's possible she could have picked Sin up, you know, wherever. Maybe Sin was living in China with her dad if he's doing these plane shipments in northern
China.
China
White?
Sea.
China, what? Now, I thought China was living in Sin. No, now it's getting confusing.
You really just confused everybody right there.
It could be, and I'm fine giving them that. It just the whole situation just seemed a little bit too convenient for what I'm used to. Right. And if it was only that one, I would have given him a pass on.
Yeah, yeah, you would just let it go. It's like that's really convenient. But now we're moving on. But
yes.
There were more, you're saying.
There were more.
Really?
Okay, so all right, so Talkman, he decides he doesn't want Oliver interfering, so he sets up conveniently. When he gets there, he's like, oh, no, you can't run after my guy. I'm going to put somebody else in danger. And he sets it up where a train, trains are hard to stop. And they can be controlled by computers, I can see that, is going to run into not another train, a bus.
Right. Well, he actually makes it so that the crossing arms don't come down. So,
right.
Because Felicity says she's trying to get him to go back up and she can't. So,
okay.
Oh no, this bus is going to collide with the train now.
All right. Now, timing-wise, I get that. Clock King, I'm good with that.
He knows about the timing. Right.
Seriously. Wouldn't a bus driver look to see if a train was coming?
No, because the graphic on screen on the readout was moving. It's like, oh, you mean the actual human that would be controlling the bus? The bus isn't.
Controlled
by that computer.
I don't know about public buses, but I know school buses are actually required by law to stop at train crossings, whether they're whether the gate's down or not.
Right.
Now, that may not be true for public buses, but
sure.
I don't know. That one just, again, it seemed a little bit too convenient. I would think that the driver would at least hear a train, see the, I don't know, whatever. That bothered me.
That, yeah. Yeah, but, I can, you know, I didn't even make that connection. I'm just like, oh no, Oliver's got to stop.
I did. I went back and checked to see if there was something going on. Like maybe he had somehow dismantled the
brakes or something.
Brakes or I don't know. But I didn't see anything. Nope. It was really just he just diverted something to go that way. And so, okay. All right. Whatever. I'll find. That's a minor one. And it did.
But that was it. So you could let, I mean, if it's just those two, right? So you could let him go.
Well. There was a couple more little
there's
ones.
There's more? There's more?
And add it all together. It bothered me. So,
all right.
Okay, so they got to find – they have to find Talkman somehow.
Yeah.
And they have to you know, be able to track him down. And I get that. And it was not a bad way that, you know, Canary was able to throw her little pole at him. that's probably
ouch.
Much cooler name than little pole, doesn't it? I bet it's not a nunchuck. What is that? A staff, maybe?
An Escrima stick.
I should know that. Oh my gosh,
it's what Nightwing uses. It's the, I believe they are South American, like battle batons.
Okay, you're not going to believe this, but I actually have an Escrima stick less than 3 feet from me hanging on the wall with my son's karate stuff, so I'm ashamed I didn't know that.
I'm going to call you. I also have your new supervillain name is now Captain Obvious.
I have a nunchucks and a staff, too, if you. And there's some kind of wooden bamboo sword. But anyway.
I was going to say, if you invite four turtles over with some pizza, you got a party.
And I can have all the sports equipment. See, that could be me. So they have to track him down somehow. I get that. And they got the blood. I get that. But then, I mean, they've got his blood, and he happens to just have a rare disease and be a genius madman. And she's able to track all this down. And literally, it only took her, like, 15 seconds, which is pretty impressive.
You just search the DMV database. It's like, because, you know, the Motor Vehicle Association, you know, they keep information about your medical diseases and stuff.
You don't think they don't know about that rash I got, do they?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't think that was a rash.
Well, don't tell anybody about that.
Okay.
Just try to keep that on the down low.
I will not tell anybody else.
All right.
Can't
all right.
tell you if the 1,000 people listening to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad I can trust you. All right. So number three.
But that was
plane plus bus plus rare disease.
Yeah. More?
There's one more.
Wow, man, you had. Okay, go ahead. Let's see what you got.
Now, let's put this all together. Now, Starling City.
Yes.
It's not Starling Town.
No.
Or Starling, what's another small word for town?
Burb.
Starlingburg. Okay, we need a superhero from Starlingburg. I kind of like that. It's Starling City. I'm assuming it's a pretty large city.
Oh, it looks like it from the, you know, from the aerial shots.
Yeah, a lot of banks.
Uh-huh.
I'm assuming a lot of money. But he goes after Oliver's money.
Well, because Oliver said, let's to, you know, withdraw my money and put it out there as bait.
And
so, of course, he goes for it.
And it's bait. And it was a lot of bait. And I get all that.
Was it $600,000? Something like that?
$800,000, I think, even. Yeah. Fine. Again, just another really kind of convenient one. And he went for it right away, right when they were ready for him. And just all of those together, it just was too many coincidences for one episode for me. Other than that, other than the episode, other than coincidences, I really enjoyed the episode, though. And there were a lot of really, really, really good things I liked.
To me, just as my overall enjoyment level, I very much enjoyed this episode. I put it in a lower echelon of episodes for this season. Out of the 14, it's probably not at the bottom, but it's within the bottom four, maybe. I felt it was a
slow. I'd agree with that.
What? You agree? You said?
I would agree with that.
Okay. So it's a slow burn episode. It didn't have as many reveals and kind of like amazing moments like we've gotten recently. Now, if you didn't think about, if you didn't pick up on the Sin thing previously, then maybe you got another little aha moment more than I got. And I thought the end was, you know, great. Again, kind of, you know, fist pumping in the air. It's like, as soon as Moira's like, I'm having a meeting, it's like, who's she meeting with? And at first I was thinking Merlin, and then I'm like, oh no, it's going to be Slade. And then you hear, Moira, who is it? And it's like, oh my God, it is. And I was watching Oliver. If you go back and watch it again, Oliver's reaction when he walks into the room. So he walks into this giant room. It's a, you know, it's a giant archway, huge room. The camera is right next to where Slade is sitting because you can see his hand. And Oliver's looking at the back of his mother's head as they walk in, like three steps. And then he looks on the opposite side of the room until she finishes her line. And then he looks and sees Slade. It's like the biggest, like, I could care less who my mom's meeting with. And he's like looking everywhere around the room. It's like, oh, she got new curtains. Oh, that looks new. Oh, what happened over there? It looks like the dog threw up. And then all of a sudden, it's Slade. You know, it's what? Like, you know, I don't know. When I come into a room, it's, you know, even if I'm slightly disinterested, I still look at who I'm taking, being taken in to meet.
Yeah, but he is so mad at her that he just, well, I mean, just being
that is
around
true.
Her just disgusts him right now. You can tell just by his face. Not to mention there's dog puke on the carpet. So,
So I didn't even know he had a dog.
I didn't either. I think the Russian housekeeper from the first episode of season one took it with her.
That's
right.
Why
there's still that's
you know
why
what?
There's still puke on.
She's going to be the big bad villain for season three. She's going to come
Ooh.
Back. And like, I want my back pay.
Oh, I just thought of somebody else that's in the wings too. Look at all those. I just thought of another Russian person in the wings. That last scene was my favorite from the episode. And the Sin's backstory that gave me a little aha, but it wasn't like,
It wasn't mind blowing.
Like a shocking, wasn't a shocking moment. But
oh my God.
Slade revealing himself and doing it like that was very good. And the handshake alone was good.
Oh, they cut, they'd cut underneath them and looking up for that firm, just, and they grab hands and lock eyes, and it's like, nice to meet you. I'm like, oh, this is going to get bad. And there is, we know that, you know, they've all met now. There's a great photo for next week where it's Thea and Oliver and Moira walking through their house. Oliver's kind of off by himself to the side, and Moira and Thea are looking kind of longingly at Slade, and Moira's on Slade's arm. It's just like, oh, it's got to be tearing Oliver up. So,
since you brought that up, and then I want to say something else about Slade, but so you let me know earlier in the week when you saw that picture and you said that Moira was on Slade's arm and you're like, what? You know?
Yeah.
When I read your message, the first thing I thought of was that Slade had a tattoo of Moira on his arm. And I'm like, man, I can't even tell you how fast I checked that picture. And I'm like, oh, that makes a lot more sense.
That would be kind of funny. It would actually be funnier if he had a picture of or a tattoo of Malcolm Merlin on his arm.
That's on his other arm. So it says he's got two, you know, it's kind of the prison tattoo kind of thing. But I want to ask you a question, and I don't want to sound like an idiot. It's more of a verification than anything else. But
sure.
is it correct that Oliver was under the assumption that Slade was dead, right?
That is the assumption. You know, as stuff unfolds on the island, it seems like we're making assumptions about things that happen because Oliver doesn't seem to reveal that so-and-so, that he knows so-and-so is alive again, even though we assumed that they were dead, which is why I keep thinking it's like, they keep talking about Shadow being dead, but at some point they're going to reveal that, well, she wasn't really dead, but
I don't think Shadow's dead.
The more we go on from that, and they keep putting it in the opening previously on Arrow part, I keep thinking that she really is dead. But, yeah, I think the assumption is that he believes at some point after this whole affair with Ivo and the boat and Slade wanting to get his revenge on the person that killed Shadow, that Oliver had to take Slade's eye and then potentially had to take his life. So I think that's what we're to assume or infer based on things that have been said or insinuated throughout the series.
Like things that he had said, especially when you know, Roy had been injected, and I think he was kind of explaining to Diggle in the way that he kind of explains anything about his past, you know?
Right.
But it sounded like he thought he was dead, like he had taken care of him.
Right. Okay. Right. And, you know, and maybe if he had said even something like that, I took care of him, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, he killed him. But you know, in the long run, we'll look back and it's like, oh, no, he, like, you know, tied him up to a tree with honey on him or something like that. Left him for the ants. You know, who knows?
He left him with the sharks with the laser beams? And then, we're just going to assume he's dead, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I told him my entire plan, and then I left the room.
Yeah. Okay, well, I just wanted to kind of check, because that's what I was thinking, but I thought maybe I had missed something. I tend to do that, because I start getting into something else and getting excited about something else, and then I realize I've screwed something up. So,
yeah.
Well, we'll kind of keep our eye on it. I guess we'll probably find out next week, just based on whatever Oliver's reaction to him being alive is.
Yeah, it sounds like, and it sounds like we may wrap up the Ivo storyline, because they're going to do that assault. They've been talking about doing this assault on the Amazo for next week, so maybe we'll see something there.
Assault on the Amazo. That sounds like a magician at a children's birthday party gone wrong.
So I do have to say that the surprise moments of the show for me, I think, were the Lance family elements with Sarah and Laurel, and then also Quentin and Dinah. And I thought, I felt Quentin was really putting himself in a predicament quicker than, of course, he was able to realize, just because, you know, he's like, oh, she's holding hands, like, oh, well, I'm going to get the family back together and we're all going to be happy and everything like that. And she's like, you know, be realistic. You know, I've got a job. You know, there's someone I like there, or someone she's involved with or whatever. And now, you know, I feel like we're going to see, like, Laurel kind of bounce back, and then Quentin's going to go drop back down the drain. But I hope not, because he did go to the AA meeting as well. So maybe he's, you know, just checking in as well. Or
yeah, I think
offering support to Laurel. So
I think he'll be sad, but I think he'll be okay. And really, guys, we've got to get him knowing that Oliver is Arrow. I mean,
that scene in the alley was painful.
Yes.
Where Oliver refers to himself in the third person. But then I heard Oliver Queen. Why am I? I don't know. I'm doing Batman's voice here. But, you know, I heard Oliver Queen got rid of it because it could be used to break into anything, including banks. It's like, okay.
Yeah. And by the way, I was just at the party with your daughter, who's here now, who you know is Canary. Oh, by the way, and you also know we're dating.
Yeah. It's like,
he's got to know. He's got to find out. I mean, it's just, he just kind of looks like an idiot if he doesn't. So, and he's not an idiot.
You know what?
He's really a good character.
The best way for them to play this off at this point, do a couple more episodes with things like this, where it's one of those blatantly obvious things. It's like, glasses on, Clark Kent. Glasses off, Superman. And people not knowing. And then, you know, have somebody say something, and then, you know, because Lance actually talked to Oliver a couple times in this episode kind of knowingly. But, you know, I thought he was going to say something, but it was more about saying how he disliked Oliver and, you know, Oliver, you're not a killer and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see one of those scenes come up in a couple episodes where it's just like there's something come up and there's kind of a like a double entendre that's said, and then, you know, Lance is just, you know, real calm and collected, and it's just like, yeah, I know what you guys are up to. You're like, I've known for like weeks. I just haven't said anything.
I would too. I would like for him to just have known for a long time and just go, of course, yeah. I mean, why wouldn't I know? Please, come on.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, well, I just wanted to put that out there. It doesn't bother me or anything, but it really does kind of make him look, I mean, even dumber than Lois Lane. Come on.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. Well, Let's talk about some of the references here. You want to do that? We had
absolutely
quite a bit of stuff here. So, obviously, we had William Tockman, who is the Clock King, and he is a long-standing member of the Green Arrow Rogues Gallery, going back all the way to World's Finest Comics number 111 from August of 1960. He has no superpowers or abilities, but he does wear a clock mask, a cape, and a blue suit with clock drawings on it. So,
well, why, you know, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. And of course, he in the comic books, he has the disease, which, of course, they wanted to keep him coming back in the comics. So at some point in the comics, it was like, oh, his lab records were switched accidentally with somebody else. So he's not really sick. And so does stuff like that.
He was also in the Batman TV series back in the 60s with Adam West.
Was he really?
Yeah, he was played by Walter Slezak for two episodes. He did that. I just thought that was interesting. I had found that out, too.
Oh, that's cool.
And I'm not sure what else Walter Slezak was in, but he he played the clock. He's kind of a older guy with his big kind of Germany-looking mustache. And,
yeah, he looks familiar. Hang on. I'm just going to look real quick. It says he was in Treasure Island, but that was the 1970s. Oh, he was in Heidi. I think he was Heidi's grandpa.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. If you're a fan of those classic ones there. So, but I always think that's kind of cool when obscure little villains like that were in the Batman show. Because everybody knows the main ones. But
like Egghead. So, and Tonkman also lived, according to the very nice shot of the Starling City driver's license we got there, if anybody wants to make costume accurate driver's license for Starling City now, you've got a pretty good reference photo of what it looks like there. He lives at 52 Nelson Way in East Starling City. Obviously, we know that DC has a thing for the number 52 with the new 52, which is the comics that they're publishing right now. Looking online, I found out that Diane Nelson, she's the president of DC Entertainment and oversees all the comics, movies, and television shows that are involving DC characters. So that was a nice little nod to her. We again hear Officer Lance's police call sign, which is Delta Charlie 52, also known as DC 52, right? So that's pretty obvious there. This is one I saw the text, which said Blue Devil on the side of the bus, but it wasn't until it was Mark Guggenheim posted on Twitter. He posted the actual poster that was on the side of the bus, and it was an ad for a quote, Blue Devil movie. It says, Blue Devil, the 3D adventure begins this summer, and it's got a picture of a blue devil holding a trident, and he's got his horns and everything like that. And a lot of people might be going, all right, so what's the big deal with that? Well, Blue Devil was a comic series from DC in the 80s about this stuntman who had an accident and was permanently bonded into his Blue Devil costume on a film that he was working on. And then,
wow, what a horrible way to become a superhero type.
There probably are worse. I'm sure there are worse things.
Maybe, but I'm going to watch what I wear from now on, just in case.
Yeah. He was a pretty funny and kind of flippant character. And he also was involved. He had he also got some other superpowers, like he dealt with magical entities and stuff like that, and has powers like Zatanna, and so his powers are based in magic, I guess. That's what I'm trying to get at. So it's a really cool little poster you can find on Mark Guggenheim's Twitter account, and they're probably
he was very excited about it too. Mark Guggenheim was very excited about that Easter egg.
Yeah, that was nice. I can definitely appreciate that. That was pretty cool. Big one at the beginning of the episode, Cord Industries, which is named after Ted Cord. And he is the president and CEO of Cord Industries, also known as Blue Beetle, number two. Dan Garrett was number one, in case you're playing at home.
Ted Cord was my Blue Beetle. That was when I was really heavy into comics. He was I loved the Blue Beetle character.
Well, yeah, he was. He kind of came back in the 80s because he was owned by somebody else. There was another company that owned Blue Beetle. I want to say it was like Charlton Comics. And I think DC bought them in the mid-80s and then started releasing their character, like the old Charlesman characters, as new DC titles. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, Dan Garrett was Blue Beetle back in, I want to say, the 50s or 60s or something like that. So, but no Blue Beetle. No, just Blue Devil.
Still haven't even seen Ted Kord yet, so no Blue Beetle.
We do know exists. There was a reference to him by name in season one.
Yeah.
It's like a party that Moira had gone to for the Kords, Ted.
You know they've got plans for at least Ted Kord.
I'd love it. I mean, he's another millionaire industrialist who puts on crazy clothes and has all sorts of cool toys and weapons and stuff like that. So,
but Blue Devil in this one, so I guess only one blue character per episode, I suppose.
Mm, yep. Huh. So you had a couple other references here that I didn't quite... I'd heard them, but I hadn't quite connected on these two.
Yeah, I'd do a little investigating on these. But so the disease that was killing Tachman was McGregor syndrome.
Okay.
And McGregor syndrome is the fictional disease. It's not a real disease that took the life of Nora Freeze, who is Victor Freeze or Mr. Freeze. His wife in Batman. Let's see, what was that? Batman and Robin, I think.
I order you to freeze.
Yes, with Arnold Schwarzenegger. So McGregor syndrome was the disease that took her life, and I guess in the end, Alfred I think had it too, didn't he?
Oh, maybe.
And that's what was he was dying, and then Bruce Wayne ended up getting the antidote or
are we talking about Batman
whatever.
And Robin the movie?
We're talking about Batman and Robin. That's why it's hard to remember.
It's like nipples but on the bat suit. That's really
McGregor syndrome did come from that, and I couldn't find any, and maybe you guys know, you can certainly let us know, but I couldn't find any other reference to McGregor syndrome in any other Batman comic or cartoon or TV show. Just from the it might have been the cartoon series, maybe the animated series.
Oh, Batman the Animated Series, maybe?
Yeah, after Batman and Robin came out. It may have been in that as well, but okay. I couldn't find any comic. But it could have been McGregor syndrome, kind of a nod to that.
Mm, yeah, that sounds good.
And then this one, now, I do think this... Now, McGregor syndrome could go either way. I don't know. Might be, might not be. But this one's got to be, and I really like this one.
I think this is too, yeah.
Extremely subtle. So the Oblivion Bar... was the bar that Sarah said she had worked in when she was talking to Laurel in The Verdant.
Which is very cool, by the way, that they come up with this reference for Sarah as part of the League of Assassins. I mean, it opens this whole backstory here, I think.
Yeah, yeah. She worked at the Oblivion Bar. Now, according to the DC Wiki, the Oblivion Bar is a drinking establishment located in a pocket dimension. Okay, that sounds weird enough right there, but it has many portals that are scattered around the United States, and presumably outside the United States, it says, that are only visible to those that are skilled in magic. So it's a magic bar.
Right.
And it serves as the home base of Shadow Pact. Now, I didn't know anything about Shadow Pact, so I had to look that up, too. And guess who is a member of Shadow Pact?
Who is that?
Blue Devil.
Oh, there you go. Full circle.
So I thought that was a pretty cool little reference and a very an Easter egg that you have to really do some investigation to find out about. So
that's great.
So thank you to all of those that did that investigation for me and put it on the internet, because I definitely didn't get that one myself. So good job.
That was very cool. We'd also like to give a brief little bit of feedback here. We got from loyal listener Remington. And this came in the other day. Oh, this was via email, wasn't it?
This was an email.
Facebook. Okay. So we do read those. We read everyone that comes in. So it says, hi there. Just started listening last week and have since burned through all of your episodes, which is I got to say, that's pretty amazing right there, because, I mean, we've got a lot of episodes. There have been a lot of episodes on the show. So.
Yeah. So thank you. How did he do that?
Well, he says he works alone in a brewery for most of the day, so he has lots of podcast time, and he's loving it. What he has been pondering since Heir to the Demon is how Sarah being back in the public eye will affect Oliver's public persona. Obviously, I would assume that he's referring to the fact that everybody had thought she was dead and now she's not. So, you know, I'm sure that would be something that would be on the news in much the same way that, like, because it was such a public, there was a lot of news stories about her and Oliver and the Queen's Gambit going down. I'm sure they'd want to focus, you know, the news would want to focus on that when she comes
back.
Yeah,
it seems, although they haven't shown any. Like, I mean, that first season, they talked about it all the time with Oliver. And,
yeah.
And I know Sarah's not as big in the city as Oliver is, obviously being a millionaire. I mean, she's the daughter of a cop, you know, but they had a relationship.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's,
I mean, with the way the
question.
Media in our world is so concerned about the most trivial sort of things, you know, with people associated with other famous people, mm-hmm. infamous people, or whatever. So, he also goes on to saying he wants to know if Quentin and Laura will continue to be oblivious to Oliver being the Arrow, with the connection that Sarah being alive and a vigilante after disappearing in the same accident as Oliver, which is obviously the same thing we've been wondering for a while now. So we will have to see how that shakes out.
Yeah, and you know, I already talked about Quentin, but I'm okay with Laurel still not knowing, because she doesn't really know anything about Canary and Sarah's connection to that. And so I can see how she'd be a little bit more oblivious. Plus, you know, she's been drunk and stoned all season. So
right. That is my biggest thing, is that, you know, even if she had seen Sarah in the Canary outfit, which she didn't, because when Sarah saved her life in Heir to the Demon, she was in street clothes, just plain clothes. The fact that she's been inebriated and stoned and high a bunch this season, it's like, you know, she probably wouldn't, she would be second guessing herself anyway. So
right.
Well, we do get another episode next week, so we will be back. I believe, if I'm correct in this, I believe the next one is called The Promise, which is not as telling as other titles like Birds of Prey and Suicide Squad. So I'm kind of unsure as to what, you know, whose promise. Mm. There have been a lot of promises that have been made. Right? I mean, Slade has promised that he will take out Oliver's eye. I think Malcolm has promised that he will have his revenge. Brother Blood has made some different promises. Oliver's made promises. A lot of people have made promises.
Well, we promise to be back next week to find all of those promises out.
That is true. So, hopefully, without further ado, that is the end of this week's episode.
Well, I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please leave us some feedback on iTunes. We'd love seeing those. You can also contact us by email. We read them all, like you said, greenjustice@randomchatter.com, or on Twitter, @GreenJusticePod, or via our Facebook page at facebook.com/GreenJusticePodcast.
Also, be sure to check out the other podcast that Josh and I do together called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which is also available here on randomchatter.com. We will be back next week with our next episode of that show, because that has also been on hiatus. And of course, if you enjoy the podcast, please be sure to tell all your friends about us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.